Praise God, it's good to be back in his house. And I'm with you, Amy. The sunlight just does wonders, doesn't it? Today was just spectacularly beautiful. I only wish it was a little less reflective on that much snow, but oh well. This will go away too. We've learned that. We are in Acts, the 10th chapter again tonight, and I want to welcome everyone to this Bible study, and everyone that's listening online as well. Glad to have you with us, studying into this part of the history of the church. And we are in, let's turn to that, Acts 10. And we are looking at question 6 that we've been on for a little while. And let's start, in verse 9, and we're going to read tonight through verse 17 just to get started. So Acts, the 10th chapter, 9 through 17, just to bring this back to our minds. On the morrow, as they went on their journey, this is the men who've been sent by Cornelius after an angel has told him to do this, and they drew nigh into the city. Peter went up upon the housetop to pray about the sixth hour, and he became very hungry and would have eaten. But while they made ready, he fell into a trance and saw the heavens opened and a certain vessel descending unto him, as it had been a great sheet knit at the four corners and let down to the earth, wherein were all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth and wild beasts and creeping things and fowls of the air. And there came a voice to him, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "Not so, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean." And the voice spake unto him again the second time, "What God hath cleansed, that call thou not common." This was done thrice, and the vessel was received up again into heaven. Now while Peter doubted in himself what this vision which he had seen would mean, behold, the men which were sent from Cornelius had made inquiry for Simon's house and stood before the gate. So we've covered quite a bit of this in depth, and we've looked at the timing of this and the very deeply spiritual specifically pertaining to sacrifice language that was the images that were presented in the vision to him. And so tonight we want to cover the rest of that question, which is to ask if it is important that God showed this vision to Peter three times. And last time I was up here, I told you that little anecdote about watching a video demonstrating how this pull-down cabinet worked and how it showed the exact same thing three times in a row, and how that registered with me to watch something work like that. And I saw a few nods and smiles up there, so I thought people maybe understood what I was talking about. And I wondered if you'd given that any more thought, that what that experience of seeing something three times in a row, what kind of an effect that has on you. If anybody else had really given that any more thought, where we left it in kind of midair, Sherry.
Scriptures, over the years, and how, you know, God gives us reminders, and also, I don't think he could really believe that this was so until he heard it the third time. And,
yeah. I agree. There really does just seem to be something about our minds that is for which something happening more than twice, more than, there's the first time, there's kind of, and we'll talk about this again probably, but the first time of something new, it's new. It's news to you. You don't know anything yet. You're taking it in. And in Peter's case, he had, you know, it was shocking. So he was dealing with that. Second time gives you an opportunity to say, okay, what did I just see? What did I just hear? But the third time, something else happens. Something changes for us in that after the second time period. There's lots of ways we could talk about it, and it'd be fun to do that, except for we don't have that kind of time. But I wanted to turn your attention to it because this isn't the only place that you see this. And I thought about a couple simple things happened to, for some reason, I don't remember why. In fact, it seems so unlikely now. So I wonder if I was misreading what these people were doing. But if you've ever noticed the people who out there doing land surveys, their job depends on what a set of three does. It's about geometry, plane geometry and trigonometry and all those things. Couldn't do what they do unless there was something about three that made things come together. And I was wondering if any of the musicians who are here in the room had thought about what happens when you get three notes, three different notes on a piano, Claudette, or a auto harp, or anything else. Right.
If you do something three times, they're children, they're not expected to learn something unless they do it three times. I actually thought also about the rooster crowing three times. Mm-hmm. He might have made that connection and remembered that it was three times that he had heard that, so that he really understood that this was coming from God. It might have triggered something in him to reinforce that three.
Right. I think very much we've got this convergence of the way that we learn, what it takes for us to learn something, and for that it to be something that we can hang on to, that it doesn't slip away from us, and then that accumulated experience, because Peter definitely had a lot of that. And so I was really kind of surprised with the direction that this study took. It wasn't at all what I planned or expected when we worked on questions. It wasn't what I expected. But I have to say that very quickly, studying this vision, I found that Peter had a lot of company in the Bible, in the times three department. A lot of things happened three times, and I'm gonna just hone in tonight on the things where the word three or third is used. There are things that are sets of three in the Bible that aren't called that. It's not like when they say, our father Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they don't say our three forefathers, but it is three, and it kind of works the same way as the things that we'll be talking about tonight. I found out that I looked at a couple references, and you do it kind of on your phone to search for it, and I found that there are at least 467 uses of the word three or third, and that it comes in as the second most common number used in the Bible. You can probably guess what the first one is. Seven. I heard somebody say seven. Seven comes in at about 735 or so uses, depending on how you figure things, I guess. So I wasn't able to confirm all of that, but at a certain point when I looked into this, it just became impossible for me to overlook the fact that the number three has a role to play in the Bible, and in the Old Testament and the New Testament, and it's very present. And so tonight our job is to figure out what role it's playing here for Peter. And and before we get any further, and I hope I remember to say this again towards the end, just in case anybody joins us late. But I because we're talking about a number, I just want to mention something that I hope you will keep in mind, which is that we're going to look at the Bible tonight. We don't need to bring anything else in. And we're not looking at anything that has been hidden. It's been in plain sight in this word for millennia now. And we're not looking at anything that's, you need to have special knowledge for, or we're not adding a new revelation or anything like that. We're just looking at something that maybe we haven't looked at in this particular way before, but it's all in here, and it's been here for us the whole time. So if you learned something tonight like I did this week, that'd be great. But we aren't wandering off into some strange direction here just because we're looking at a number. God created the world in such a way that it has numbers in it, and it's a tool that he can use. He created the whole creation in a way that he can use it. That's why, you know, parables work. It's not because the sheep or the vine I'll think of my other example later, because they're really special or there's some kind of code or there's a hidden meaning. That's not why it works. It works because it's his creation and he made it that way. It works that way for us. You know, recently we had, you know, a golf game and a Jeep Renegade, and it worked. It worked because that's the way God made our minds in the world that we live in. There's a fit there. And it's a gift. It's a tremendous grace to us that he's done this, because it could be a whole lot harder. It could be a whole lot harder to understand and to get that foothold and then that handhold and then that embrace of his word. So I just wanted to mention that, because I don't want anyone to think that we're talking about something, you know, weird here, needing to talk about number. So that's part of his system, and so we're trying to understand what that count of three gets used for. And it would have been really handy if he had just told us. If I could turn you to a chapter and a verse and say, here's what it means. But he didn't do that, and he didn't do it for the number seven. But I'm guessing that everyone here is quite convinced from the word that we studied. Oh, it's been a while since we did that, but from the word that we studied and from the experience that you now have in looking at the word with that knowledge about seven and when God uses the number seven, that you're quite convinced about it. That's my guess, because I am. I was taught it from the examples that are observable in here, and then we see it in action over and over again as we study the word. So that's just the nature of the thing that we're here tonight to look at. And I appreciate your comments, and I want to offer another opportunity here. If anybody had thought about it in these terms, that this interesting fit between our minds and the world that God created and the things that he wants us to know, wants us to have access to in his word. So, Mark.
I'm not sure that this, again, creates an extraordinary innovation or understanding, but Peter in particular had a relationship with the number three. He was told that he would betray Jesus three times. And then when Jesus came back and met him on the beach, he was asked three times if he loved Jesus, and then went on to be given the admonition to feed these sheep or feed these lambs. And so I think it had a real intense way of penetrating into his consciousness, especially when there was something serious going on. I mean, clearly denying Jesus three times, benchmark in his life, and being told to feed the lambs. And so in this situation, being told to call nothing that God created unworthy of his attention must have been another deja vu for him.
I agree. And we'll be talking about Peter a number of times. We'll be actually turning to that one, hopefully, here in a few minutes, and just to look at what all took place in that event. So, and I do wish that I could kind of take you through the whole step-by-step process that I went through to sort through these things, the things that I came across as I read and researched and things like that, but that doesn't work because it takes too long. There's 467 of them at least in here, and so I had to get a little pickier than that. And so I decided that probably the best way to start out was just to take you to where I ended up as I looked at what a count of three in the Bible does for our understanding. And then I'll kind of give you a sense of that, and then we'll sort of use that concept to check against some examples here in the Bible. So I did a fair amount of reading about it. about what Bible scholars and commentators think that the count of three summarizes. Did anybody look at that sort of thing to see what you can find out there? And overall, I could just summarize it to say that they all basically agreed that it was another number that signified completeness. Okay, which is one of the ways that we understand the number seven, is that it is completeness of a perfection nature. It is something that has been taken to its highest level of development and has no longer any flaws or any needs for improvement or change. But this completeness of three, they definitely understood to be different from that. And so it was a matter of figuring out how to describe that difference. And there, a number of words kind of came up, a lot of them actually. I think I ended up with about 15 of them written down in my notes. But and the primary ones were the word harmony, which is interesting because that's what I refer to when I ask the musicians what three notes do for you. And they make a chord. That's how we recognize what song's being played, and that there's an effect that has on our minds when we hear the convergence of those three different sounds that two sounds and one sound just don't do. And so harmony was a good word. I took that one back to the Bible. Just the simple word agreement was another one that came up more than once. But when I took those things back to the actual examples in the Bible that I was looking at, I still felt like something was missing. And so I, you know, after going back and forth like that, I eventually had a picture emerge in which I could see that a count of three seemed to indicate a matter that had been completely settled. So something that had been unresolved or disputed or not understood or something like that was completely settled. The information that was needed was brought in, it was set down, it was shown in the manner of three times because that, like Claudette brought out, it's part of the way that we learn. And then the matter was then settled. So I'm hoping that you'll be able to see the picture that I have in my mind when I say that. So I want to turn to Ecclesiastes 4 because this is kind of the scripture that worked for me. Ecclesiastes 4, the 12th verse. Oh, excuse me, the 4th chapter, 12th verse. Ecclesiastes is a little harder to find. But Ecclesiastes 4, the 12th verse says, "And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him," but this is the part that helped me, "and a threefold cord is not quickly broken." So the picture that brought to mind was that that fixedness. Something has been fixed in place, because if you picture that three-stranded cord, it's not three strands that are just hanging together, you know, hanging apart from each other. They've been wound together in order to make a real rope. It's done in a pretty fancy way to bind those things together so that there's strength in it that it can't be taken apart easily. And it's going to hold up when it's put to use. And then that's the other part that we want to keep in mind when we're looking at these events that include something of three, a set of three things, three repetitions, three people, 3 days. There's lots of variations on this, but the other thing we want to keep in mind is that just like you don't, especially back then when it was a lot of work to make a rope, you don't make a rope just so you have a rope laying there. You make it because you have a use for it. If you don't have it today, you know you will at some point need this rope. It's a tool. It's something that has a purpose. And so this matter that is settled by the three things, the 3 days, people, repetitions, is a matter that needs to be settled so that the next thing can happen, so that the purpose can be accomplished. So The best way that I could think of is you settle a matter, and then you put it behind you, and you're done with it. You don't look back anymore. You don't say, well, what about that? When God answers those things, it's taken care of. We put it to rest, and it frees us to go on to the next thing. And I hope you can see me right now describing Peter to you in this vision, because that's what happens to him. He has this issue that he has had in his mind his entire life. God needs him to now be done with that line of thinking. He wants him to put that to rest. That is a settled matter, and we talked already about how that was settled. And now it's time to move on. And in fact, Peter can't move on in the direction God needs him to go until this matter is settled. He cannot go down those stairs, meet those men, and still have this in his mind, and still have this be what informs his behavior. And informs who he preaches the gospel to. That cannot happen. So God needs this matter to be settled. And he uses this three-time vision to accomplish that for Peter. It doesn't leave Peter any room to doubt what he saw, to think that, well, maybe I didn't get that right, or anything like that, because it was the same thing three times. And so I want to look at some other places so that we can see that this is not just the way that it was for Peter. And I can't quite say that, because I think Peter's involved in all the examples that I picked, but it wasn't just because for Peter. It's something that God does many, many times in the Bible, so I wanted to turn to some of those. So let's start with Matthew 26. And Matthew 26, the 36th verse through verse 46, which is quite a bit to read for the amount of time that we have. But I'm going to ask you to really follow along with me here, because, as you'll quickly notice, this is a time that something happened three times, and we want to notice all that and what builds up as these repetitions occur. So Matthew 26, verse 36 says, "Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. And he said, and saith he unto them, My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. He went to a great deal of trouble to show us that this happened three times. And if we take those things that he puts in the word to be for us and to be meaningful for us, then I had to look at that. And I don't know if you felt it, but I did as I read it. And I pretty much think you do too. You feel that progression. You feel that that question that he comes to God with in prayer in the beginning. And like if we read in verse 42, he's actually shifted the way that he's wording it. And this time he's saying, if it can't pass from me. Before he's like, is there any way it can pass from me? Here he's saying, if it can't, then your will be done. And the third time, we aren't even told what he said, because the matter was settled. That was the way he did it. He brought his his concern, his anguish to God and laid it at God's feet. And when he had done that, that matter was settled. He got up and he went to the disciples, and then he moves on and he faces all of the things that he has ahead of him with this matter dealt with. He has asked God, and he will accept God's answer in whatever form it comes to him, and that matter is resolved, and it permits him to continue on with the work that he has to do. And that's one example. I'm not sure how many more I can give you tonight, but let's turn to at least one here. And this is the one that that Mark was referring to. So let's turn to this in Matthew, the 16th chapter. We're going to start there just to get a context, because the context really made a difference for me. So Matthew 16, we're going to read verses 21 and through 23. And then we will get over to the first nine verses of chapter 17. So Matthew 16, verses 21 and through 23. And you can, you know, look at the chapter and the other things that are going on in this chapter and sort of see where we are in the timeline of Jesus' life. So verse 21 says, "From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. But Jesus turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." Now let's just skip over to this a few verses here and pick up at verse 1 of chapter 17. "And after 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John his brother, and bringeth them up into a high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them. And his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elias talking with him. Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If thou wilt, let us..." That's one way of putting it. It's good. It's extraordinary to be there. "If thou wilt, let us make there 3 tabernacles, one for thee and one for Moses and one for Elias. And while he yet spoke, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and behold, a voice out of the cloud which said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him. And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their face and were sore afraid. And when Jesus came and touched them and said, Arise and be not afraid. And when they had lifted up their eyes, they saw no man, save Jesus only. And as they came down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, saying, Tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead." I wanted to read that part in 16 because that's the background of this event. I have always thought, in my mind, that there were 3 of them there because he needed to have 3 witnesses for this. He needed to have 3 witnesses who could report and testify about his transfiguration. But that's not what's happening here. First of all, we've learned a while back, I couldn't find the actual one, the teaching that it was involved in, but somewhere along the line here in studying Acts, we learned that it took 2 witnesses in the Jewish world to produce evidence. You could convict, so to speak, on the basis of 2, but not on 1. Didn't need 3. There's no need for 3 witnesses. It's not filling some formula for the ability to be believed when you testify. So that's not what the 3 is for. It's for the purpose of settling something. And if you look at what we just read back there in 16, that's what needed to be settled. The disciples wouldn't listen to him when he talked to them about what was going to happen. They shut him down. They weren't having this discussion. So this is a severe rebuke from Jesus. Get thee behind me, Satan, to Peter. This was a serious problem, and it needed to be settled and done away with. I think that probably seeing Jesus in all of his glory in a spiritual realm in which Elias and Moses are talking to Jesus was probably pretty effective for putting an end to this discussion of you can't die. You can't, none of these things can happen to you because what? Because he can't overcome it? Because he's not the Son of God? Because he's not the Messiah of whom all the promises of him being the deliverer are apply? So they needed to put these things together and put this concept, this objection that they had to rest, because he needed them for the rest of his walk. He needed his disciples to believe him, to be able to follow what took place and not misunderstand it and not misconstrue it and not fail. He needed that to happen. And so this transfiguration was the time that he put that whole thing to rest. We're done talking about that now. From now on, and the instruction that they get says that, says hear him. In another translation, it says heed him. Listen to him when he talks to you. When he says it, listen to him. Don't say no, Lord, to him. Listen to him when he talks. And so that's what they needed. That's what needed to happen in order for the next part of Jesus's ministry to take place. It needed to happen that he had them solidly behind him, even though we all realized that they couldn't make sense of everything that happened, but they needed to not be arguing with him about this. They needed to pick it up and carry it with him to the end. And so we just find this again and again, and I'm going to run out of time, but I'm going to take us to another one anyway. So let's turn quickly to John, the second chapter. John, the second chapter, and just verse 19. Because this is very early in Jesus' ministry, so I kind of wanted to start there. It says, Gospel of John, chapter 2, verse 19 says, Jesus answered and said unto them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. And if you don't mind turning back now to Matthew, the 27th chapter. Matthew 27, verse 62. So we just read this very early foretelling by Jesus that he would be destroyed, he'd be killed, and he'd come back to life in 3 days. So here we have, at the very end of Matthew, literally we're on the last page here, we have verse 62 says, now the next day, and this is during, this is after Jesus has been buried, now the next day that followed the day of the preparation, the chief priests and Pharisees came together unto Pilate, saying, sir, we remember that deceiver said while he was yet alive that after 3 days I will rise again. They knew this. This 3 day period was well known to them, and it was meaningful to them, because another thing that we looked at some point here, I believe it was in chapter 2, Peter is preaching the gospel, we became aware of the fact that the Jews at that time had the view that a body began to decay after the third day. And I don't know if you remember that, but that was why it was so remarkable that he raised Lazarus on the fourth day. Didn't do it during those questionable days, during those days. And that's why they say, he's going to stink, Lord, because he'd been in there for longer than 3 days. And so that's what made that really noticeable. So that three-day period, when Jesus started talking that way, right here at the very beginning, that meant something to them. They understood that language to be talking about death and resurrection. And so he's been preaching this the whole time. He's been teaching this the whole time. And then here we've got that 3 days time that is going to settle the matter of Jesus's death or the matter of his resurrection. It's going to do one of those things. When 3 days is up, people are going to know. And we all know, first of all, we know what happened. He was raised from the dead. So it settled the matter. It was taken care of. And from that, of course, everything that we have here comes out of that. If that matter had not been settled, and I realize that people have picked it up and redebated it over and over again, but That's because they didn't know this, that it was a settled matter. It was taken care of in a formal way, actually, for even though the Jews believe about 3 days is when you start a body starts to decay, whether that was a belief or anything else, he even respected that and showed it to them in this way. That's how careful he was to settle this matter, that he had resurrected, and now the rest of everything else has been opened up. Everything else about what his victory over death opens up, because this matter is closed. This one's done. I was so tempted to only give you three examples, but I couldn't resist this, the one that I was wrong about that, this one here that Mark brought up earlier. So I want to turn to John, the 21st chapter, and I will try and keep this brief because we've already talked about it a little bit. John, the 21st chapter, verses 15 through 17. I know we've read this so many times, but again, I ask you to kind of listen to it with ears that are listening to what happens when you experience this three times like Peter did. And please, like for example, notice that there's more than one thing that happens three times. Okay, does that make sense? So let's just read it and you'll see that for ourselves. John 20, the 21st chapter, starting in verse 15. So when they had dined, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these?" And he said unto him, "Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee." And he said unto him, Jesus said unto Peter, "Feed my lambs." He saith to him again the second time, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?" He said unto him, "Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee." And he said unto him, "Feed my sheep." 17. He saith unto him the third time, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?" Peter was grieved, because he said unto him the third time, "Lovest thou me?" And he said unto him, "Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee." Jesus said unto him, "Feed my sheep." And Mark already brought this out, but this took place after Peter had denied him. Peter had been absolutely felt he could promise Jesus that he would never, ever turn his back on him, never deny him anything like that, and yet it happens. The cock crows three times, like Claudette brought out, and that matter was closed. When the cock crowed three times, the matter was settled. Peter had done that very thing that Jesus had said he would do. And that's where Peter's at right now. But we talked last time about the fact that Peter had the keys to the kingdom. Jesus had already given him them. So Peter needs to be resettled. He needs to be reestablished in his role. Because otherwise, what are we going to do on Pentecost? We got no keys. He has to settle the matter with Peter that he is forgiven, that he's accepted, and that his role is still there. He wasn't taken out of it. It didn't change. It's been settled. And that's what Peter does. Peter's now free to go on and do the things that we see Peter doing, the things that we needed Peter to do, including having this vision that we're talking about tonight. We needed all of those things to happen. So there's a lot of examples in here, and some of them are really super simple. Some of them are actually natural things that happen, and that people use the device of three things to kind of settle a matter. And some of them are very, very simple, and some of them are really magnificent, and like Peter's vision is. And so I just want to throw one out because I just really enjoyed reading this one. I won't turn there, but I don't know if you've read the book of Esther any time in the recent years, but it's an amazing story. And if you read Esther 4, verse 14 through 5, verse 1, you get a brief description of the things that she received from God by stepping out on the foundation of a 3-day fast that she had set for herself and she had asked of all the people. And she settled the matter. She had an enormous problem, something was absolutely impossible for anybody to solve, and she was the only one who possibly could, and all her avenues were shut down because it depended on her walking in to talk to the king when he had not invited her, and that was punishable by death, and she needs God to do something here. So she settles the matter with this fast, and the people join her in it, and then all of these the whole nation of Israel is saved by this, in this vast empire, and all their enemies are destroyed. And so these 3 days, and I think that I don't want to put anything that I've ever fasted for on a scale like this, but I think most of us have a good idea about what that third day of fast does, about how what you're thinking and how you feel about it and what you're talking to God about. I think we have a good idea of how that third day settles things for you. If it doesn't, it's probably because you didn't have your question formed, because he will answer you in that amount of time when you dedicate that time to him. So I think that's something that we all kind of recognize. So that more or less brings us back to our vision here in Acts again, if you would turn with me back to Acts 10. And in my mind, this is one of the monumental threes in the Bible. As him being shown this 3 times in order to settle the matter of the what had been unclean under the law is no longer unclean. Because that needed to be resolved, that needed to be moved out of the way, left behind, and now Peter's going to move on. He's going to take that information and apply it to the next thing that he can find to apply it to. And it happens to be at the doorstep of the house he's at. When he comes out of this trance, and it's right there. God didn't even allow any time to pass, so there was no doubt that Peter was supposed to take this with him. That the way that he had laid eyes on those unclean animals in the vision is the way he was going to look at these Gentile men who were coming to talk to him and who were asking him for something, wanted him to go with them, but he couldn't do that anymore. When he saw them, this vision had taken that away. This had established that no longer applied. And so when you go on here, and I did read it tonight, when you look at verse 17 and it says, while Peter doubted in himself what this vision which he had seen should mean, I'm going to suggest that you go look that word up in the Greek, because it's not saying that he doubted the vision. He is not confused. God's made it clear. He has settled the matter. What he doubts is he doesn't know what to do with this information yet, because he doesn't know these guys are there. What was that about? What am I supposed to do with this information? But he's going to find out very quickly here what he's supposed to do with that information, and that he's going to start this new walk. He's going to start applying this new principle to his ministry. So I, like I said before, that I would remind everyone, we've been in the Bible. We didn't have to go anywhere else. We didn't have to look up any weird charts or anything like that. This is in the Bible. And I hope that you'll have an opportunity to keep it in your mind and sort of think about it a few times, because it's kind of like, how can I say this? I personally remember learning about what I could get out of knowing what 7 showed me in the Bible. I remember that. And it was like, well, it was okay before then, but I love knowing it. I love knowing that. I love having that extra insight from God about his hand at work, and that none of this is random. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to use this for ourselves as well, that we'll be able to see that action of God's part and look for this matter of, this has been settled, now you're free to do the next thing. And to take what God sends, give what God asks you to give, whatever form it is. And there's lots of forms in it. I'm not going to tell you that it's, they're all like A, B, C, done. It's a little bit more complicated than that. And that's kind of what makes it interesting, isn't it? Because God's pretty creative. He doesn't need it to be simple. he can handle it being complicated. But if we'll look there, we can see that sort of thing. So I would encourage you to, as you continue to read, to keep this in mind that this is what Peter had been equipped with, and maybe keeping that three strand cord in mind. It was really helpful to me because of the strength and the integrity that it involved, because that's kind of what this is about, is another form of our integrity with God, is There's not these loose ends, there's not these little hangers-on that are nagging us in the background about, well, what about this and what about that? The matter's been resolved. The matter has been settled. And like a strong cord, when that happens, it has a purpose. And Peter's purpose is already happening. It's like I said, at the doorstep. It's been coming for 2 days. And so the next thing that we're going to do is take up the question of what he does with this new situation, this new information that he's got, how he applies it to the things that come up next. So I hope you'll get a chance to look into that in the coming weeks. And any comments before I close down the... I know it's a lot to think about. I do realize that. I hope you'll do that a little bit. Let your mind go there a few times, and with examples that you come up with, or because I was, needless to say, I couldn't check all 467 in the amount of time, but it didn't fail me on the ones that I did. So I had to stop and think. For example, the Transfiguration took me a minute. It's like, what's being settled here exactly? Because I kept thinking about witnesses, but it wasn't about witnesses. It was about this problem that they needed to resolve and to put behind them. So, any questions, comments? Thank you very much, all of you, for your participation. I appreciate it.